Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland podcast. So today we have a great guest at the end of the show to bring you into the weekend. My friend Giulio Di Cienzo, based in Milano, one of the hosts of the fantastic Box to Box podcast. While we did talk a little bit about the top of the table, we took more of a deep dive on the mid-table and the race to avoid relegation, since we haven't really talked too much about that on the pod. So that'll be at the end. I think you'll really enjoy it. Giulio's really, really funny and really informative as well. Of course, with the weekend games coming up in Serie A, we have Thousand Names, who last week, our oracle did predict that Di Francesco would be sacked after just three matches. So let's see what he has on deck for us today. But at the top of the podcast, I'm very excited to chat with our dear friend, producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg. There's been, you know, some intersection of Serie A and Premier League with the rumors of Conte maybe at Man United down the road. So we'll get to that after. But I want to ask you, Alex, you know, I like to always think how sometimes it's easy to overreact to small sample sizes at the beginning of the season. So there's four storylines that stick out to me that I've been thinking a lot about, Alex. So I want to see which one of these, if there's one that you are buying or there's maybe one that you're really like, nah, I'm not buying that at all. So first off, Milan as a very serious Scudetto contender. I'm never afraid to admit when I'm wrong. I really was not that high going into Milan at the start of the season, but they have played very well, especially in Serie A. So that's one storyline. Another storyline is Juve struggling quite a bit out of the gate. They did play well in the Champions League against Malmo, but they are not off to a good start in Serie A. So the other storyline is Juve potentially dropping out of the top four and not making it back to the Champions League, which would be really rough for them financially. Then another storyline is Atalanta cycle being over. They are off to a slow start in Serie A, and their goalkeeper was their best player in the Champions League. Probably not a great sign. So that's another storyline. And finally, this storyline that Inter, there are some people that will go as far as saying that Inter is even better than last season, which I think is definitely a bridge too far. So I'm going to settle on Inter being at least as good as last season. 7 points out of three matches in Serie A. I thought they played well against Real Madrid, deserved a little bit better. So these are the storylines, Alex. Any one of these really stand out to you that you're like, I really want to jump on this train?
So, David, definitely not the Inter is as good as last season. Just way too early for me to jump on board with that one. And we could say that maybe I'm being biased, because partially the reason why I will not agree with that is because Inter lost Lukaku and he's now doing the business for Chelsea. But seriously, let's be objective. Over the course of a full season, that's when it really helps to have someone like Lukaku or an elite striker, because you're going to have dips and valleys, peaks and valleys, as they say, of your performance as a team. But the reason why you have a guy like that is because they can bail you out and still get you points when maybe you don't even deserve them, kind of like Lukaku did for Chelsea the other night. And this season is way too young for that even to be an opportunity for Lukaku to do that with Inter so far this season. So between losing Lukaku and losing Conte, and then just the fact that the season is so young, and I still don't think they necessarily replace those guys directly as well. They could have collectively, we'll see. But the jury's way too much out right now for me at all to say that. And I just don't think they will be as good as last season. Whether they win the title or not, I think their game-by-game record, their points total, it won't be as good. So no, I won't jump on board with that one. Atalanta, that's a really tough one, because I'm not saying their cycle's over. If I say for Inter that the season's too young, then it's definitely too young for a team like Atalanta to make any big judgment here, because they're the classic team, almost like a shooter in basketball, where once they catch fire, that can really catapult them for a while. So they're a momentum team. I'm not at all willing to say their cycle's over. The Juve will drop out of top four. I'm actually giving more consideration than the Atalanta and Inter ones. But I can't get on board with that yet. I can't. Just because, David, the top of Serie A, I think, is so up for grabs. That's why I can't get on board with it. Because if it's up for grabs, even though Juve have certainly just, I don't want to say fallen, because that would be bad karma with Chelsea soon going to play them in the Champions League. But they definitely are not where they were when Allegri was previously at the club. So I hear the argument for, okay, they could drop out of the top four. They just don't seem to be the same team that they have been. But if it's up for grabs, the Scudetto and really top four, then Juve are absolutely in that shout. So I can't get on board with that one yet. Milan being serious contenders for the Scudetto, I'll buy the most. I will buy that the most. Because I do feel like they have a good blend in their team of young players, players in the middle of their career, players at the end of their career. And they have this collective chemistry and momentum from last season, it feels. I know they lost to Liverpool midweek, but that's still got to be a showing where they can get some confidence from it. Like, because I said in the previous one on Juve that the title and the Scudetto odds and the top four race, it's all up for grabs, I think that means Milan can be serious contenders for the Scudetto. So, yeah, honestly, maybe the way I answered it is my levels of certainty. So, like, Inter, I'm definitely not agreeing with that they can be as good as last season. Atalanta, I'm pretty sure their cycle is not over, or at least it's way too premature to say so. Juve could drop out of the top four, but I think it's too early to say that because everything's up for grabs. But yeah, Milan, I will give a shout to be serious contenders for the Scudetto. So there you go, David. You almost got to hear me work it out really in live time. So what about you?
Yeah, I like your thought process, Alex. I'm going to kind of tackle it in a similar way. Let's start with Inter. Look, is it possible that they repeat as Serie A winners and do better in the Champions League? So I guess by that definition, you would say they are better, possibly. I think those things could happen. And I still think right now Inter are my pick to win the Scudetto. So by that definition, you could say maybe that they're better if they win the Scudetto and go further in the Champions League. But it's the context, right? Serie A is weaker than last season because of all the players that left. Might be more interesting because of the coaches, but I think it's fair to say the quality of the league's down a little bit. So although you repeat as winner and do better in the Champions League, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're better than the version of last season. And look, as much as I do like their additions, I think what you said, Lukaku, and there's no doubt there. So I'm going to write that one off. But I am proud of the fact that I wasn't as down as so many others on the day Lukaku was sold. Inter is still really good, but not as good as last season. So that one I'm writing off. The Atalanta cycle being over. You know, what I like to do is I like going back to outlines of the podcast from the beginning of last season to kind of see how, well, what we were saying about Atalanta back then. And the storyline at the beginning of last season, they started pretty slow back then too, was that we were talking on the podcast about Gasperini all of a sudden having all these toys, like they added Miranchuk, they had these extra players and he was trying to fit them in and it wasn't working out too good. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. You're absolutely right on the momentum. I totally can see Atalanta going on one of those runs where they win, you know, 10 out of 12 games, something like that. I think they're going to do it. And I think the fact that Musso, their keeper, on one hand, it's a little bit discouraging that he was their best player in the first Champions League match, but he's also a clear upgrade on what they have. So I'm not going to say their cycle's over. That storyline, I'm not buying at all. But I think them being serious title contenders, there's just always something that I feel is missing for Atalanta. But we'll see. Look, they did what they were supposed to on the transfer market. So those two storylines, I'm not buying at all. And the Inter one, I'm just not going to buy no matter what happens this season. The other two, that's really what it comes down to. So Milan being serious contenders for the Scudetto, what would be the reasons for that? Obviously, they're off to a great start. They have continuity. They've done well. They're off to a great start, and Kessie has only played in two games. Benacer's barely played. Ibra hasn't played yet. So the case can be made that they can be even better, right? So that would be the case. On the flip side, we know that football at the beginning of the season is a little bit deceiving. We know they're going to have Kessie and Benacer go in the Africa Cup, but Tonali's been awesome. So he's going to have to keep that up. My biggest reservation on Milan would be that Pioli's teams historically always get off to good starts. And I think the fact that they have continuity contributes even more. All that being said, Milan, and I, when I went through my exercise of doing my red and blue chip players, it became pretty obvious to me that maybe I was underrating Milan a little bit going into the season. So I am buying that they are serious Scudetto contenders. Also, because I think there's a very good, there's a chance that Juve could drop out of the top four. Like, I think what stands out to me about Juve is those games against Empoli and Udinese. It felt like we had seen those games so many times in previous years. And I think a lot of people, me included, thinking, well, Allegri's going to come back. A lot of this is going to be figured out. These games that they drew against these poor teams are going to magically become into 1-0 wins. And I just don't see it. And I think there are genuine reasons to be concerned at Juve. Szczesny, definitely one of the top. And I've said it, although this whole argument, Juve scored as many goals before Ronaldo, I think now it's just different, and they're going to miss their goal. So if I had to pick one out of all these, it's going to be Juve drop out of the top four. I think it's very possible. Look, last season, Napoli didn't get in. I think Roma better with Mourinho. So one of those two could take Juve's spot. I don't think it's outrageous to think that. As much as I think Milan could be serious Scudetto contenders, I will give a slight edge to the Juve one. Okay, let's shift gears, Alex. And this week, something interesting happened. Kind of a coincidence. So, you know, after the Man United match against Young Boys, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the next spot for Antonio Conte, who everyone knows I'm a huge fan of. And, you know, I've been saying for a while, if I had to pick a team that I could see him going to next, it would be Man United. So I tweeted that, had a lot of back and forth with Man United fans, and we'll get into that in a second. And I have to say, overall, the tone was very respectful. I really enjoy those chats. But then the day after, Gianluca Di Marzio was in England covering the Liverpool-Milan match, and he was on Sky Sport. And, you know, he was actually there with Conte, who was an analyst for Sky. And he was asked on Sky in England, you know, could Conte go to Arsenal or Spurs? And he said, probably not, because Conte absolutely wants a winning project. And Gianluca said, you know, it would probably have to be something like Man United. So let me first off say that's like a pure coincidence. This is not some, you know, media thing where me putting the toe in the water, nothing like that. To be honest, I haven't really been texting Gianluca that way in a long time. So it would never be anything like that. But it was pretty interesting that would happen. So let me ask you, Alex, we've talked about Conte potentially the Spurs and Arsenal, and you were like, I would take him more seriously there. But I have a feeling if he goes to like a team like Man United, maybe you don't look at it as something that's just cute. Would that genuinely concern you if Conte went to Man United? And again, important that this is really hypothetical, even the way Gianluca put it. This isn't a report. This is just an idea. But let me ask you, would you be seriously concerned if Conte went to Man United?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the first thing someone might think against what I'm saying is, well, does Conte really fit Manchester United's team? They just got Ronaldo, which means they start almost every game. They're guaranteed to start at least Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes. These days, Jadon Sancho, even though he hasn't hit the ground running. So Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes, Jadon Sancho, probably Mason Greenwood as well, because they usually start just three attacking midfielders, you could say. So left, middle, right, and then Ronaldo up top. And then usually Pogba's also in the pivot, which means it's just Nemanja Matic, who's like the least sexy of all of the outfield players that aren't pure defenders. So that's a lot of glitz and glamour normally for Antonio Conte. Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes, Jadon Sancho, Mason Greenwood, and Paul Pogba. That's a lot of glitz and glamour. So you can actually say that maybe the team isn't best tailored for him. With that said, let me be very simplistic with my answer, David. Very simplistic. United have a very, very talented team. That's not a secret. They really upgraded their team in terms of talent. They got Rafael Varane, they got Jadon Sancho, and they got Cristiano Ronaldo in one window. And they obviously already had some talent beyond that previously. The only thing holding them back, besides maybe getting a real DM, because they don't have that, and they want Declan Rice, and that doesn't make me too happy. But anyway, besides maybe having a hole for a DM, they have a very complete team. The thing holding them back, the person holding them back, is their manager. Ole is not a good manager. That's it. That's it. He's not a good manager for the top level. And as a Chelsea fan, I am very much Ole in. I am very much Arteta in. I am in on some of these managers that are clearly holding their teams back. But the difference is Arsenal have huge problems beyond Mikel Arteta. So I'm not as worried about them. So I think when we talked about Conte going there, like, yeah, it doesn't fill me with a lot of pleasure because I know that he's going to make Arsenal more serious, but they're still going to be so far off because they're just such a problem overall as a club. United have gotten things together lately. The last year or so, especially since the Super League stuff and all the protests, United have started to act a bit more serious as a football club. And the thing holding them back is Ole. And Antonio Conte, as crazy as he is, he is a top five manager in the world, no doubt about it, when he's employed. No doubt about it. So maybe he frustrates United fans if he gets hired from game to game because he's not putting all their sexy stars out on the pitch at the same time. But as a rival fan, they're going to be a hell of a lot more serious. And those games that they're kind of bound to slip up on now, even with all those stars, I feel like they're way less likely to slip up with Antonio Conte. So, yep, the fit might not be the best, but I'm going to be simplistic. They have great talent. They'd be getting a great manager, and they'd be getting rid of the person holding them back. So, yeah, it would definitely scare me. So, David, now that I've gone through that, like, you know Conte insanely well. So what are some of the factors maybe United fans should consider when thinking of him potentially arriving at their club, him being Conte?
Yeah, well, I think first off, what you said, the simplistic thing, is like perfect. Because at the end of the day, Conte is one of the five best coaches in the world. I think the world of him. I'm not as familiar with Ole as you are. So, yeah, I think that's the most simple way. But there are a lot of factors, and I want to go through them a little bit one by one, because I think some of them are facts, some of them are fiction. And one of them, I think, is what I always say, how a lot of times we're not really debating facts anymore. We are debating if we like a person or not, and then we pick the arguments based on that. So first off, the big criticism, the fit of Conte with the style of Man United. Like, I do know, I might not be totally familiar with Ole, but I do know enough about Man United's history, their style of play. I remember how bored fans were with Van Gaal. They didn't particularly like the Mourinho era. So I get that. For that, I would point to the fact that Inter fans weren't thrilled with the fact that Conte has this huge Juve past. And it took them a little while to kind of get over that. Now, Inter have been playing pretty defensive. I mean, they had Mourinho, Herrera, their historic coach, was one of the founders of Catenaccio. So there is a little bit more there. But remember, Conte was like a Juve icon. So they had to accept that. And pretty quickly, once they started winning, all that was forgotten. So I think that's a little bit overrated. And as far as that, the argument, well, we already had a coach like Conte, Mourinho, and that wasn't great. To that, I would respond that Mourinho, to me, was no longer in his prime when he went to Man United. Just he wasn't the Mourinho that from like a couple of years before. Conte, on the other hand, is completely at the peak of his powers right now. So I don't think that's a very fair comparison. The other thing that I've heard is that, you know, Man United has these young players that they want to play, and Conte just wants veterans. I think that's grossly overrated. Sure, I think Man United, maybe this is a little bit distorted by the fact that Conte wanted Ashley Young and Sanchez, players like that. These were backups, though, at Inter. And to be honest, I also have to wonder if that was maybe somewhat part of the Lukaku for players with high salaries. That, I don't know if help you out if you need to move some players with high salaries. That, I don't know if it's true. But in any event, I wouldn't say, oh, Conte just wanted these types of players. Sure, they also signed Kolarov, but he was a backup. By the same token, Conte launched Pogba at Juve when Pogba was really young. And not only when he was really young, he launched them when Juve had arguably one of the best elite midfielders in the midfields in the world with Vidal, Marchisio, and Pirlo. But Conte found a way to get Pogba in there. By the same token, he wanted Barella. Barella arrived from Cagliari, and Barella was already a good player. He became awesome under Conte. Bastoni, who was a highly rated prospect, became awesome under Conte. So I don't buy this argument of the old players. And his Inter team, you guys can talk about the older players. I would say the team that Conte had at Inter, and most of it is still there, is not an old team. You know, we mentioned Bastoni, Barella, they have Lautaro. Even guys like Brozovic, De Vrij aren't particularly old. I mean, they're old with Handanovic, a few positions back up, but I would not describe Conte's Inter as like an old team. The other argument that I hear a lot is that Conte is a short-term manager that then leaves his clubs in shambles. This is completely inaccurate. This is really noise over reality. And look, I'm guilty of this too. I remember during the season when Conte was attacking the board a lot, I was like, huh, is this really sustainable? But again, winning forgives everything. And it's just not true that he leaves clubs in shambles, because let's look at them one by one. He left Juve. They continued to win a Scudetto for six more years. They went to the Champions League final the season after Conte left, and then went to another Champions League final. So you can't tell me at all that Juve was worse off after Conte left. At Chelsea, when Conte arrived, they weren't in the Champions League. They won the Premier League. Granted, the second season wasn't great, but look at Chelsea now. I think it's very unfair to say, oh, he left them in shambles. The Italian national team, sure, they didn't qualify for the World Cup under Ventura, but a little bit of the Conte DNA was part of this team that won the Euro. So, and Inter, we talked at the top of the podcast that this is a storyline. There are some people that genuinely believe Inter's better than last season. And it's not Conte's fault that Hakimi and Lukaku were sold. Granted, that's one of the reasons that he left. But you can't tell me that Inter is worse today than when Conte took it over. So those are the things to watch. The last one that I've heard a lot, and this falls under that I think you can argue both sides depending on if you like, is the fact that Conte holds the board accountable. And I've heard some Man United fans say, oh, with the Glazers, that wouldn't be a good fit. But it's like, if you like Conte, you're going to say, well, it's great. We're going to have a manager who's really going to push the board. And Inter would have never signed Lukaku had Conte not insisted and drove him crazy to do that. So if you like the idea of Conte going to Man United, you're going to look at that as a positive. And if you don't, you're going to say this isn't going to work out. So I'm going to say the only arguments that I think are valid against Conte at Man United are the style of play, which, again, I think if Man United started winning, they wouldn't mind so much. And Inter did score a lot. Granted, it was a lot of counters, but they did score a lot under Conte, and the track record in the Champions League. That is the one argument that I think is very fair that you want to criticize Conte on. I'm not going to try to defend it too much. I would just say the one time Conte was expected to do well in the Champions League was probably the second season At Chelsea, we knew at Inter, it was always about the Scudetto. But this is also Conte. I always say it. He is the Floyd Mayweather of managers. He always picks a spot, the right time for a job. And I wonder if the next one is going to be a job where there is going to be expectation to do well in the Champions League. Because I think Conte is very comfortable managing in the league and showing that he can win over 38 games or whatever. Little bit less in those knockout competitions, although he did well at the Euro. So that, to me, in a nutshell, is how I see the Conte thing. Anything you want to add based on everything that I said there, Alex? Does that kind of make sense to you?
Yeah, it all makes sense. Absolutely. Like, the one thing that I would be looking for on the positive side as a Chelsea fan, besides the fact I wouldn't want to see this, is just the fact that United fans are ready to have a go, David, at anyone, because they're really excited, and I don't blame them. So this isn't me like talking down about another fan base. They're really excited about how quickly they made their team look a lot more serious on paper. And now, if anything delays them getting back into title conversation, they're really ready to come down hard on whatever's delaying that, whether it be a player or Ole or Ed Woodward or whomever. So if Conte was consistently doing things that they couldn't understand and the results weren't great to start off, as a Chelsea fan, I would very much be looking forward to like Mark Goldbridge videos, hopefully losing it, and other United content creators losing it. Because if there's one thing I know about Conte, is he can be maddening. And it's a more in the moment thing. Like, obviously, David, you've been able to see me take a step back now that Conte is no longer my manager, and I can kind of laugh about it. Like, I often have a smile on when I talk about Conte because I'm not in the moment anymore with Conte. But I know that the start would be somewhat important for Conte at United. Like, they're not going to sack him right away unless he chose to step away after some poor results to start. So he would get time to iron it out and probably make them super serious. But if the start was too tumultuous, maybe it would already be one of those situations where United fans had made up their mind on him unless he did something miraculous. So, like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. But I will say that if I could see it with the guarantee that they won't win titles, I actually would be very much in favor of seeing it, because it would make them even more invested, making them think they have a chance because everybody knows how good Conte is. But if I could see Goldbridge, who I love and respect, if I could see him have a few more rant videos, because that's what Conte can do to you, take it from me, I would consider it. I would highly consider it. But yeah, I mean, listen, just in general, David, the fact that Conte's out there for these teams with struggling managers, like, it's got to be something that all these clubs are thinking about. But then again, as Conte proved with Spurs, he's not just available for anyone, kind of like we said with Lukaku.
Yeah, for sure. Great stuff. Okay, guys, thanks for indulging us on that little thing. I know not exactly Serie A related, but you guys know Conte is one of our guys. But let's switch gears. We're going to get to Serie A. We have 1,000 names, predictions. As Alex was going through, I read quickly what he had. If you heard me chuckle in the background, that was why. So let's start. Actually, I'm going to start with today's game. We do have a prediction for the Juve-Milan match. But let's start with today's game. We're recording this Friday. Later today, Sassuolo is going to host Torino. 1,000 names has Sassuolo winning 3-0. Goal by Juricic, Traore, Rogerio. And he says, while De Zerbi gets made fun of in the Champions League in Moldavia, his replacement, Dionisi, is going to get the front pages of the newspapers. He says Juric is going to be destroyed. And he said that Locatelli wasn't a good midfielder, Sassuolo. The one to get was Maxime Lopez. Not bad. In Italian, pronostico Sassuolo Torino 3-0, Juric, Traore, Rogerio, mentre De Zerbi viene deriso in Champions in Moldavia. Dionisi se prende la copertina dei giornali, Juric annichilito, e Maxime Lopez, quello buono, non Locatelli. Okay, I do like Sassuolo. I have watched a little bit of them this season. Dionisi was the high-rated manager they got from Empoli to replace De Zerbi. Torino destroyed Salernitana They're a little bit of a hit or miss. I feel like Torino is either going to be really good or really bad in a match. So I'm going to go Sassuolo. I do like their squad. I'm going to go 2-0, and I'll give a goal to Raspadori and one to Juricic. Next up, we have Napoli traveling to Friuli to face Udinese. Fausen has Napoli winning 3-0. Hat-trick by Osimhen. By the way, he put on a show yesterday in the Europa League, and he says Ospina is going to save a penalty. He says Gotti to replicating Marcio Amoroso. Il calcio di qualità paga sempre. He says playing good football always pays off. In Italian, Udinese-Napoli 0-3, tripletta Osimhen, Ospina para rigore, Gotti non può nulla contro Locchi Luciano, Osimhen sulle orme di Marcio Amoroso, il calcio di qualità paga sempre. Udinese are off to a good start. 7 points in 3 matches. Napoli did play in the Europa League, so I'm going to go draw. I'm going to go 0-0 for this match, which are rare in Serie A these days, but I'll go with that one. And then finally, the big game on Sunday. I'm going to try to go watch this with the guys at the Milan Boston fan club at Ducali. Here is the prediction. Juve Milan 1-2. Goals by Kier, Kessie, Morata. He says Cuadrado's going to miss a penalty. He says Pioli, after making the people at Anfield shake, is going to win in Turin by playing a European-style football. He says Allegri's going to continue to get kicks to the face by playing his antiquated style of football. He says Theo Hernandez is going to destroy Chiesa. And he said Pirlo is going to be laughing while wearing a Milan jersey. It's just fantastic. In Italian, Juve Milan 1-2, Kier, Kessie, Morata, Cuadrado sbaglia rigore, Pioli dopo aver fatto tremare Anfield e spugna Torino col calcio europeo, Allegri continua a prendere schiaffi col suo calcio antico, Chiesa asfaltato da Teo, Pirlo ride con la maglia rossonera. Tough one. I feel like I always take the easy route when there's these big games and go with a draw. So I am going to contradict a little bit what I said at the top. You know, we were discussing the storylines. I did say I felt like it was more likely that Juve would drop out of the top four, slightly more than maybe Milan being serious Scudetto contenders, although I do think they are going to be. But I just don't see Juve getting off to really such a terrible start. So I'm going to go, this is going to be a classic Allegri game, which I think Juve is going to pull out 1-0. So I'm going to go 1-0 goal by Dybala there. So those are our game predictions. And before we get to Giulio Di Cienzo, available to all, we're going to do a special part of the pod for our patrons. If you enjoy Calcio and consider becoming a patron, we have an episode every Tuesday just for patrons. We answer their questions on Friday. We have a monthly special with Napoli Outsider, which is really worth the subscription alone because he's so great. We also have tiers with articles, some great stuff from Enrico Passarella. I also write at least once a week there. So, and you'll also be supporting a great cause since we do make a monthly donation to the Insuperabili, a great nonprofit in Italy that runs calcio camps for kids with disabilities. I'm thrilled to be joined by one of our next guests, who's become absolutely one of my favorites, both to follow on Twitter and to chat calcio with, my good friend Giulio Di Cienzo, who is based in Milano, one of the hosts of the outstanding Vox to Box podcast, really one of the best pods in any language, but for culture and Italian, you won't do better. So I always love chatting with Giulio. We're going to talk a little bit about the teams at the top, but what I really wanted to get to with him is talk about the mid and lower table. So Giulio, it's always a real pleasure to chat culture with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Thank you so much. You're always too kind, but I'm ready. I've studied everything.
Okay, good. All right, Giulio. So this is something Alex and I talked about at the top. You know, it's 3 games in. We've had some Champions League. We've seen a little bit the teams, but look, it's very easy to overreact. We know Calcio di Agosto can be, you know, a little bit deceiving. So I have these storylines, and I want you to tell me which one you believe the most and which one you believe the least. So one storyline is that Milan are serious challengers for the Scudetto, and you and I talked a little bit before the season started. I have to admit, I didn't think Milan were going to be serious contenders. So that's one. They're off to a great start. Juve is really struggling. So another storyline is that Juve could finish out of the top four and not even make the Champions League. Another storyline is Atalanta's cycle is over. They have not looked great so far, to say the least. And another storyline that has come out, which is pretty interesting, is that despite losing Conte, Lukaku, and Hakimi, there are some who believe Inter, I'm not even going to say better than last season, because to me that's a little outrageous, but let's just say as good as last season. So out of these four storylines, Giulio, which one do you believe the most and which one do you think is utter crap?
So the first underlying message is that in Serie A there are a lot of storylines that you have to follow. I believe the most, the first one, because Milan has a solid structure that comes from a year and a half with Pioli. The last year, Milan get to the second spot in Serie A, and they maintained their core, the core of the team, despite Çalhanoğlu and Donnarumma. And it's a solid team that knows how to play, and the player know each other, and the coach knows how to move his players in the formation. So Milan is a solid contender for Scudetto. The most important thing to understand about Serie A is that the last year, apart for Inter, the other teams were all the other team for the first fighting for the first spot were near in a little bit of points. So it's a very even race for Scudetto. So Milan is a serious challenger because of that. Instead, the least storyline that I believe is the one about Inter, but for a simple reason. It's impossible to consider Inter as good as last year. First of all, because Inter in the last year played an extraordinary Serie A. They get their second score of their entire story of Inter, so it was something spectacular. And the other reason is technical. We lost Conte, Lukaku, and Hakimi. And for, in my opinion, Hakimi is the main reason, because you can somehow surrogate the work of Lukaku, and Inzaghi could have some ideas at work like Conte's one. But you have no one that could play the same way that Hakimi has done in the second part of the year. So the main reason is that Inter is not as good as a season. That doesn't mean that Inter couldn't play for Scudetto, for what I said before. But Inter is not as good as last season. The other two stories are true, because about Juventus... No, it's important. Because Allegri has to work harder than expected to get together his team. Juventus lost Ronaldo, that creates some problems and solved some others. But they have to find a new balance in the team. A part of that, Atalanta has started slowly, but he's having some troubles with injuries, and they lack in that moment options on the offensive side. That is the main positive things about the last year of Gasperini.
Very interesting. I think you made a lot of good points, and I couldn't agree more on Inter. And look, I get it. It's exciting. Zico off to a great start. Correa, that great game coming in. I get why people would, but I think you made a great point that Inter really had a stellar Serie A campaign. But I still think they are the favorites despite it all. But I agree with you. I wouldn't go as far as saying they're as good as last season. Okay, two other teams that I think are pretty interesting. Obviously, Roma off to a great start with your friend Mourinho. I think we kind of expected that, but they have looked really good. And then another former coach that you followed closely, it's Spalletti at Napoli. I have to say, I was very high on Napoli squad last season. I know it wasn't an exciting summer for them, but they kept everyone. Anguissa looks pretty good. So out of these two, who do you think has a better chance of being in the conversation for the Scudetto, Roma or Napoli?
I agree with you with the consideration about Napoli, because Napoli, in my opinion, is better for the roster. They have a lot of quality, different players, some different options to get the results. And the last year was a strange campaign for them with highs and lows. And Spalletti could help to normalize all of that. But Rome, instead, is the main strength of Rome this year is the manager, Mourinho, because Mourinho brings personality, brings a lot of attention, but also a winning ability that Roma needs desperately. So it's an even between Napoli and Roma, but for different reasons. For me, Napoli is better for the roster and Roma for the trainers.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I have to say, when I saw Napoli at the beginning of the season was 12-1 with bookmakers, I was like, that's a good bet right there. All right, so let's move our way down the table, because on Box to Box, you really are one of the experts. You are the wizard of the lower table. But let's start with Fiorentina. This is a team you and I talked about last time we were on. Look, usually I'm pretty down on Fiorentina because I think they are absolutely a team that easily gets overrated. But I really like this season. I think Italiano's been superb. Obviously, Vlahovic continued what he left off. They really have an interesting squad. Now, I don't think they can break top four, because I do think there are a lot of teams that are clearly better, but I think they can sneak in 5-6 place. Do you think that's possible?
Definitely. Absolutely, yes, because in my opinion, they have a solid roster with some quality picks, and now they have a trainer with ideas, and that was the main lack in Fiorentina the last year, because between Iachini, Prandelli and Montella, they always had some problems. And you know that the season starts and then they will have some problems and begin everything from the beginning again. With Italiano, they started a new way, and Italiano is a very capable manager. He brings Spezia from Serie B to Serie A. He built a solid team with attention to the game, and he will do a great work in Firenze. So I expect Fiorentina could challenge for a spot in Europe, and somehow they will get the spot that was of Sassuolo in the last year. We'll get to that eye of the Serie A, in my opinion, because as you said, the problem with the top four spots is that there are already six teams that fight for that. So it's a little bit difficult to get to that level. But Fiorentina started something interesting, and they also have the players to resolve hard games, especially on the offensive side.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm very intrigued with Fiorentina. I have to tell you, I'm really itching to go back to Italy to watch some games in person, and Fiorentina is definitely at the top of my list. Okay, let's start talking a little bit about the relegation race. And you and I offline have been chatting about how many bad teams there are in Serie A this year. Some squads, the rosters are pretty dire. But let's talk about the two teams that made coaching changes. And I'm curious to see if you think that ultimately how much this matters, because there are a lot of worse teams. So what surprised you more, that Cagliari already got rid of Semplici, who was the traghettatore last season? And I got to give him credit, because Cagliari were in a really rough spot when he took over. But we see sometimes when the traghettatore stays, it's not great. And then we had Di Francesco at Verona. So both were gone after three games. Which of these two surprised you more?
None of them surprised me, honestly, but because for different reasons. Just the timing was a surprise for me, because Semplici, as you said, was traghettatore for Cagliari, but from traghettatore to Caronte sometimes it's a thin line. So the problem with Semplici Cagliari is that they showed a lot of defensive problems that need a solution. They had the same problems this year, but you know, when you get in the last in the last days with a team, you get all the problems. You have a little time to find solutions. But after all the work in the preseason, there were the same problems. Was the same situation of the last year. So changing the manager was an option to solve this kind of problems. Cagliari showed a lot of problems in the first games. They were totally unable to defend, and the last game against Genoa was a statement game, but on the negative side. For Verona, instead, it was just a matter of time. Because I had no faith in Francesco,
yeah.
And I expected I expected that Verona will give him some more games, because you chose him, and so you in the first days usually you stay with your manager. Instead, they prefer to change, but the Verona's situation is a great, really, really great mess. The changing of the on the bench for Cagliari could make the difference, because they have a superior roster apart
they from, do
from, in that side of the table. It's enough to call the names of João Pedro and Keita Baldé. The last year was an exception that Cagliari had so much problems, and they need to change to get over that kind of problems. For Verona, I don't think the change could get something better, because they have great roster problems. They have enormous problems in their defense, but also in the offense, because you have Lasagna, Simeone, Caprari. So yeah. you don't have much goals. So I don't think that changing the manager could bring something so special that could elevate Verona.
Well, yeah, especially when you bring in Tudor, who I have to say, you know, it wasn't easy to do worse than Di Francesco, but maybe they did. And look, at least Cagliari brought in Mazzarri. It's amazing Mazzarri's been out of Calcio for as long as he has. I think that was a solid hire. You're right. Cagliari, to me, has a pretty good squad. You know, João Pedro, Godin, Nandes, Cragno. I mean, they shouldn't be quite this bad. I agree. So you think Verona might actually be in trouble, right? Because you and I have been talking a lot how there's a lot of bad teams, you know, we have, and we'll get to them in a second. But so you actually think Verona could be in trouble here this season?
Yes, I think Verona part of the bad teams. If you look at the roster, you hardly find someone that you see, and then he will save Verona, because for example also Barak, Lazovic, they are good players, but they couldn't do not enough to resolve all the problems of this team.
They've lost, and look, Silvestri was really good for them. Di Marco did well for Zaccagni, of course. For sure. Okay, so let's start talking about the other team. So before we started recording, you told me you watched that Venezia-Empoli game.
Yes.
I did too. I love early in the season when two newly promoted sides play each other, because it gives me a chance to really kind of get to know them. So I watched that game. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Who of these two teams do you think it's better? Because I think Empoli, you know, they have a good manager, Andrezzola. They have a pretty good squad. They've been up and down. In Serie A, they have a few intriguing players. Venezia, though, I have to say that game looked pretty good. Even Buzio, who had heard a lot of it, was like, not too bad. So of these two teams, which one do you think is better?
It's hard to tell, because as you told, Venezia has quality, and Zanetti showed ideas and also the ability to manage his team, changing the names, the positions, and so on. But Empoli, in my opinion, has overall better players. Their style is different, as was pretty evident in this game. Both have some defensive problems that could create some problem in the rest of the season. But they are good teams. They are enjoyable teams. They try to play. They have ideas. They have some quality players. So it's interesting to see how they will go on in the Serie A. They have some problems. And I don't think that, and probably they will get relegated at the end of the season, but it could be an entertaining trip to the end of the season.
Yeah, I like both these teams. I did enjoy that game, and I look forward to watching a little bit more. So let's talk about the other teams. Let's start with Spezia. I'll ask you about the other teams after. Do you think Spezia are a lock, certain to be relegated? Because the storyline is Salernitana and Spezia are really in big trouble, and then it's just one other team. Do you agree with that assessment that Spezia are pretty much doomed?
Yeah, the problem with Spezia is that last year they avoided relegation for a little bit, and this year is they have less quality player, and they didn't have Italiano, that was a key. They had a key role in all the Spezia's epopea, non mi viene in mente in inglese. So I think that Spezia more or less will be at least in danger all season. The main problem of Spezia is that they need to find someone who score goals. They don't have big names in front, and they have Manai as a main bomber right now, so they will have problems. If you look at also the highlights of Udinese Spezia, Spezia played a great game. They nearly dominated all the game, but they couldn't find the way to score. The last year they had Mbalanzola, Piccoli, and started well from that point of view. This year they didn't have nearly no one, and then we will see Thiago Motta. What will do as a trainer, because he in the beginning of his career he made some curious choices before he goes to Genoa, and he had a special feeling with Genoa, but why 3 years of Spezia right now? And so we will see what kind of ideas he will bring to the team.
Okay, let's talk about other teams that are been at the bottom of the table in recent seasons. Tell me if you think any of them are particularly in danger. So a box-to-box favorite team, Genoa, kept Ballardini, which really helped. Sampdoria, who I think are really going to miss Ranieri and have Daversa. Bologna, yeah, they lost Tomayasu, but pretty similar squad to last season. And Torino, who brought in Juric and a bunch of players at the end of the window. Is there any of these teams that, or more than one of these teams, that you think could be really in danger of getting relegated?
I don't think that any of these teams will finish really in danger, because the last season, the only one was Torino, but because of some problems about the roster, the manager and the alchemy and so on. And Torino need a sparkle from Juric. And maybe they found it as we see the last day. The problem is that are too much teams that are clearly worse than this. So these four teams had something like six teams that are clearly worse than them. So it's hard for them to find a real danger in this area.
Okay, so let's close on this, Julian. Really fantastic job. I always enjoy chatting calcio with you. Everyone, if you're learning Italian, or if you speak Italian and you aren't listening to Vox to Box and you're listening to this podcast, that was already a bad decision. But let me ask you this. Tell me three players, they could be really on any team, top team, lower table team, that surprised you in a positive way this season.
Okay, allora, first of all, the first name that I think that anyone will do in this kind of question is Vlahovic, but because it's pretty obvious, I expect a step forward from Vlahovic in Italiano system, and he made it. He's a player with great abilities, not only in scoring but also in playmaking, and with Italiano he will do a huge step. So I exclude Vlahovic from this question. Then I go with Arnautovic for sentimental reasons, because Bologna needed a center forward desperately in the last years, and Arnautovic provided something that simply there wasn't. But the real answer is Tammy Abraham, because Abraham had a strange history in Chelsea. He started very strong, but he looked like a goal scorer. Then Chelsea spent something like 300 million euros in forwards just to get him away off the pitch, and then they sold him to Roma. And then he came to Roma and became a total striker. He played on every side of the pitch, in all of the offensive front, and showed great ability in control of the ball, in running, and so on. After him, I'll go with Brahim Diaz, because the new Milan number 10 showed great abilities. He played well also in Champions League. He found himself a real resource for Milan in the spot of the trequartista. And the last name, because I fall in love with him watching Empoli, is Bairami. Is another trequartista. Yeah. Is full of qualities. He has the ability to play on all the offensive role, and we will talk about him.
Yeah, a big fan of him. Totally agree. Well, Giulio, I can't thank you enough. Love your energy. Love your knowledge. Great stuff. I learned a few new Italian words. What was from traghettatore to carone? Was that
Caronte. Aspetta,
Caronte. Caronte.
Perché Caronte was like the mythological character. I don't know. I found always in English.
I love Charon. It because I knew the traghettatore part, exactly. But I didn't know that. That's all.
Charon. Was the traghettatore in the Stige. So it's a little bit a negative way of traghettare qualcuno. Ecco.
Fantastic. Great stuff, Giulio. But I can't thank you enough. Everyone check out Vox the Box. I look forward to chatting with you again on the pod. Giulio, keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. You're always too kind.